We're going to call the joint HES meeting together to order today, and we are having a presentation today on reclaiming futures. And first of all, though, I do want to, for the record, show everyone that's here. And it is April 12th, and it is about 7 minutes after 4. And we have Senator Thomas, myself, Rep. Wilson, Senator Davis, Rep. Faircloth, Representative Newton, Representative Cisna, and Senator Johnny Ellis. And in the back is Senator Bundy. He has a meeting to go to shortly, so he's going to stay and watch as much as he can. So without further ado, first of all, the presenters have requested that we save questions till the end, or they'll never get through. So we'll do that so that we can get you get it all in. And so we'll just let you take over and tell us your names and what's happening.
Thank you, and Chair Wilson and Chair Davis for holding the joint Senate hearing. My name is Tom Begich. I'm the Project Director for Reclaiming Futures. I'm sort of our master of ceremonies, as it were, but what I'm going to do is introduce just very briefly to you the names of the other folks that are with the team, not just those testifying, but the other ones that have come down, just so you can see folks that are here from the Anchorage Project of Reclaiming Futures. And then what we plan to do is we'll show you a very short video that will be followed by Dr. Nissen's presentation. Master Hitchcock from the Anchorage Children's Court will present. He'll be followed by Nolan Ogle Andreessen, who is one of our youth who's been through Reclaiming Futures, and then I'll close out the testimony. We'll try to keep it within the half-hour limit for our presentations, and then we'll be open for questions. We may go over just a tiny bit, but if we do, we'll just speak more rapidly in the answer to the questions. But let me just quickly introduce you to some of the team members. Linda Moffitt is from the Division of Juvenile Justice. She's our Justice Fellow. Next to her is Master Hitchcock, who you'll hear from later. Nolan, who I just mentioned to you. Dr. Nissen, who I've mentioned to you. This is Mitch Patterson, who is a consultant with the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, who provides a lot of the funding for our organizational effort for Reclaiming Futures. Professor Andre Rose from the University of Alaska Justice Center has done some of the statistical work you'll see here. If you have questions about that, we'll bring him up to answer them. Karen Schaff, Volunteers of America, which provides our treatment services. Next to her is Matt Pritchard, also up from the National Reclaiming Futures Office. He does communications for their office. In the back is my deputy director. Victoria Shaver is also the director of the Anchorage Youth Development Coalition. You might know her from that as well. And then, did I miss anybody? I think that's the team. So that's our team. And with that said, I'm going to ask Mitch to come up and start the video for you, and we hope that you'll have lots of great questions for us.
All right, and let the record show that Senator Elton has just joined us.
Apologies, Madam Chair.
And Representative Gardner has joined us.
In some areas around the United States, it truly is easier for kids to get drugs than to get treatment. Our research shows us that kids who abuse alcohol and other drugs are much more likely to come in contact with the juvenile justice system. But ironically, once they get involved with the system, they're unlikely to get help for the very thing that brought them to the attention of the authorities. That's really why Reclaiming Futures was developed, to break this destructive cycle of alcohol, drugs, and crime. In 10 communities, we've been working hard over the last 5 years to reinvent the way that substance abuse is dealt with in the courts, in partnership with communities, treatment programs, families, kids themselves. We've been doing this in 3 specific ways: advocating for more treatment, working to build better treatment, and moving beyond treatment.
So we have a wealth of services in place for Christina. The problem is that she is a chronic runner. And when she's gone, she's generally out on the street prostituting, involved with drugs, alcohol, and a variety of people. And she's only 14 years old. So.
Good morning, Christina. Before you came into court this morning, our team, in your case, had a meeting and discussed your case. And everybody made a contribution about what they believe is the correct approach in your case here in treatment court. And the recommendation that's been made is that as soon as we can find a bed for you, either at Visions or another program, that you go there for treatment.
At one level, you're kind of saddened to see such a young life
be off track like that so seriously.
What gives you hope right now?
I'm hopeful, or I think that's the thing, just to kind of build hope in the child, to let them know that your people out here care about you and they really want you to succeed.
I was living on my own in a hotel, selling drugs, make a living, and just doing that. And I wanted to change.
Before I went into treatment, life was pretty rough around here. We couldn't leave money, we couldn't leave valuables, anything laying around him. He was pawning some of his own stuff. He was very aggressive, very hateful, very much in denial.
I always felt like people would tell me I had a drug problem, and I'd be like, no, I don't. But, obviously I did, or I wouldn't have gotten in all the trouble I got into. Cabin Creek, it helped me out a lot, I think. You know, they were just pretty much talking about all aspects of your drug problem and your family life. And like, what led to you being there and what you need to do when you get out to get your life back on track.
You'll have kids come in who have used kind of heavily, and they, you know, they'll talk about feeling really bad, feeling really down. And then all of a sudden, they think clearer. They think they see things differently.
You are coming in here for the treatment and saying, okay, you know, I'm ready for a change. But it gets real scary when we think about doing something without that alcohol and drugs. You know, how are you gonna cope? How are you gonna have fun? How are you gonna deal with boredom without it?
Cole had some drug issues that he needed to work on, and he just needed not only a probation officer to help him with it, but he needed a mentor to try to help him understand what the drugs do to you and help him along this process. And he realized that I was here to help him.
You're like another brother to me, man, for real. I mean, it was like when we first met, I was probably trying not to open up to him at the beginning, but after a while, I started getting used to him, and then we just started kicking it.
Going to school, right?
Going to school every day.
Okay.
Every day.
Well, that's good, man. That's good. I'm proud of you.
Oh, that looks good.
He wanted to change, and he was on his way, just needed a little guidance and some assistance. So we were there just to try and show him some of the positive things that he was doing.
They listened. You know, really seen that I was a good person. That's why I'm successful today. Graduate from high school, that's what I'm about to do. Go off to college, major in computer technology, keep a clear mind, and stay focused in school.
I sent some strange kid, some stranger into rehab, and I brought my kid home. I hadn't seen him for a long time.
I'd like to stay on track, finish out this school year, you know, go to college, and hopefully, you know, graduate and get a good job. But I mean, as of right now, things are going pretty good for me.
But they have always known that we are absolutely committed to their potential.
For many of our kids, this will be one of the first major positive celebration they've had in their lives, where the community is standing up to compliment them on a job well done. This is very important to these kids. And it's in many ways a rite of passage that hasn't been built in anywhere else in their lives.
It's my completion of drug court.
I'll be a lawyer. That's like my number one goal. I want to be a judge, actually, but gotta be a lawyer first.
We had a young lady who was ready to be thrown away. What a cost it would have been to the system had we not been able to pull her back from the edge. And what a blessing it's going to be for all of us to see where she takes this gift.
Every community wants a solution, a way to reclaim lives, decrease crime, save money. Our country's at a turning point. We have an incredibly important choice to make. There's no reason every community in the country can't do this. All it takes is leadership. We shouldn't settle for less than a model that truly reclaims futures.
record show, we have this little lull that Senator Dyson has joined us.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
Good afternoon. Thank you so much for the opportunity to speak today. It's a pleasure to be here. We know that you're looking for ideas, but also for solutions, and that gangs are on your mind in the state of Alaska, and that you're very interested in models that can help pull kids out of criminal careers and being pulled deeper into the system. And we also know that many members of the Alaska legislature understand that alcohol and drug abuse by young people in trouble with the law is a leading public health crisis in the United States today. We're here today because we believe Reclaiming Futures is a model that can solve many of the challenges you're facing in the state. My role as the National Program Director of Reclaiming Futures is to tell you what we've accomplished in our first pilot phase, what's coming up next here in Alaska and elsewhere in the United States. But before I do that, I really want to commend the cutting edge work of the Anchorage Reclaiming Futures team. During my time as National Program Director, I have truly had an opportunity to watch them grow and blossom. The vision, leadership, and commitment of the Anchorage team is known now throughout the country, and because of them, Alaska is now recognized as a national leader in creating innovative and effective solutions to the challenge of teen drugs and crime. You should be very, very proud of them. I know that I am. Let me begin by telling you a little bit about Reclaiming Futures and how we got to where we are now. For years, we have been seeing a very disturbing trend of young people ending up in the juvenile justice system with very serious alcohol and drug problems, but without access to alcohol and drug abuse treatment. Because of that disturbing trend, in 1998, the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation decided to invest in building a model to really address this. We brought together some of the best thinkers, planners, researchers to build a comprehensive system of care, accountability, and opportunity. Reclaiming Futures was really developed, as was said, to really reinvent the way that the juvenile justice system approached the issue of alcohol and drug abuse. We did this so that the kids you heard in the short tape there, and that the young man you're going to hear talk in a few moments, would not only be held accountable for mistakes, but also get the treatment and community support that they needed to avoid becoming trapped in a cycle of drugs, alcohol, and crime for the rest of their lives. When we started the work, which was really about 10 years ago in terms of conceptualizing it, there was no model to follow, interestingly. We had treatment alternatives to street crime programs, we had drug courts, but Reclaiming Futures really intended to go further than that and really look at a true systems change, not just a superficial way to address the issue. To guide us and keep our feet on the ground, we focused on the following types of questions. What do kids struggling with alcohol and drug abuse and delinquency really need to be successful? What would a system of accountability, care, and opportunity really look like on the ground? And how can we begin to move a community's juvenile justice system in that direction? In 1999, we announced that we were looking for 10 communities to join us with that effort, to really be an incubator for that idea. And we put out a national call for proposals and were truly overwhelmed when we got 280 responses back from that. It showed us that nationally, both the recognition of the problem and the readiness to do something about it was very, very high. In the end, we could only choose 10 communities to work with, and they're all listed in the materials that you've got. I won't go into detail about that now, but obviously Anchorage was a fierce competitor in that process and has delivered very impressive results that I'll be talking to you about in a moment. You've met some of the young people affected by this program in our short film, but what I want to do now is tell you a little bit about what the actual building blocks, what is the process we're talking about, what is the systems change, and why is it so different and so important. We know that communities are all unique, so we had to build some kind of model that was flexible enough to accommodate a variety of community and jurisdictional variations, but something that was consistent enough to constitute a model, be evaluated, and when that was proven successful, then be replicated, which is the point I'll be talking about in a few moments. Working together as a national team, we really came down to six steps. And what's remarkable about these is as I go through them quickly, you know, one might say to oneself, well, this all seems pretty obvious and simple. But the fact is, the idea of having a comprehensive, consistent manner of recognizing and addressing substance abuse in the juvenile justice system is quite a breakthrough. In fact, most communities don't do this. It can safely be said we track FedEx packages more effectively than we track young people's experiences of this kind through the juvenile justice system. Our failures in this area cost our communities millions and millions of dollars and waste among our most precious resources, the potential of young people. For that reason, we know we can and should do better, and that's really what I'm here to share with you today. So I'll draw your attention over here, and there's a version of it here, and there's a version of it in your packets, but just quickly, coming across the left side is sort of the way kids come into the juvenile justice system. We know that between 60% and 80%, or estimates suggest that 60% to 80% of young people who come into the juvenile justice system have an alcohol and drug problem. If that is the case, then we should be wanting to screen every young person that comes through the front door of the juvenile justice system, knowing that if there is a problem there and it isn't dealt with, that young person's problem will likely persist and they will recidivize and increase both the seriousness of their offenses, their time spent in the system, et cetera. So we want to screen people as early as possible with a very simple, brief screen, you know, much as you would get at the doctor for some other kinds of things that you might seek advice for. If something shows up through the screen, it just sort of throws a switch, yes, no. If something shows up through a screen, a young person moves to the second part of the Reclaiming Futures model, which is a full assessment. An assessment tells us in a more in-depth way what's going on psychologically with that young person, whether or not there's been physical, sexual abuse, other problems such as domestic violence, hunger, school, or health problems. And all of those things have to be factored in together if we're truly going to develop a set of services that's going to help lift a kid up and out of the juvenile justice system. Assessments under the Reclaiming Futures model are also unique for their emphasis on identifying a young person's strengths and interests. We believe these are truly assets, and I do strongly believe they are jet fuel to the process of a young person turning their lives around. What's good and working in that young person's life is every bit as important as their challenges. Once the assessment is complete, step three of the Reclaiming Futures approach occurs. A specialist works with a young person, their families, and a community team comprised of both formal helpers, counselors, probation officers, etc., but also informal helpers, the people in the neighborhood, members of their family, teachers, etc., to develop a coordinated care plan. This is the plan that will guide a young person, hopefully, out of the system. As with our assessments, a Reclaiming Futures plan uses a very strength-based approach, which is to get back to this idea of really building on every bit as much as what's right with a young person as what their problems are. And when possible, also builds in pro-social opportunities, and by that I mean youth leadership opportunities, school opportunities, civic engagement opportunities, getting kids to volunteer in the communities, uses natural helpers, which again are just an alternative to the paid professionals in their lives, and help reconnect them with school, and finds jobs with and for them to offer them a path to the future. These things are all so important because at the end of the day, it doesn't matter how important or how, doesn't matter how quality or a treatment program is or a justice program, at the end of the day, it's really communities and families that do the work of reclaiming a young person. It's not a treatment program, it's not a justice person. Programs only do a good or a bad job of getting that process going. And we believe we need more of the programs to help get the process going, but we also really need those community members to help us take over when the programs are finished. The next and fourth step of the process is making sure the plan starts. And again, while it seems clear and simple that if you make a plan, you'd assume it would get started, one of the major reasons kids do falter in the system is that a good plan might be developed, but then it isn't followed through upon. A young person doesn't actually make it to those first few treatment sessions. It's one of the chief reasons why kids don't get through. So through careful tracking, Reclaiming Futures has developed a variety of ways to make sure these first all-important treatment sessions begin, and when they don't, follow up promptly to keep kids from falling through the cracks. This is a process we call service engagement, and it's the fifth model in the Reclaiming Futures approach. It's played a very important part of our success. Keeping appointments dramatically improves young people's chances of succeeding in treatment, so we watch for it carefully. And then finally, the sixth and final part of the process is to transition a young person into a completion phase of formal services and launch them out into a life free of formal supports, but rich in informal supports. So really, one letting go and the community grabbing on at that point. Again, while this approach seems simple, the fact is that very, very few communities across the United States provide anything close to this level of attention and coordination of services to these young people. And this is amazing because we're living at a time in history where we have more research than any other period previously to show that if these kinds of steps are followed in a consistent way, youth will abuse fewer substances following treatment, reoffend at much lower rates, their lives will improve with dramatic increases in public safety and decreases in cost. In turn, these cost savings can be available to then redeploy. Fewer commitments and probation violations as a result of this improved sort of systemic response in the end means fewer dollars spent on these kinds of expenses and more public safety. So I want to talk with you just a very brief time about the difference we're making across the United States as well as in Anchorage. And I want to start with national data to talk about our national evaluation because that's been a really important part of what we've done. We contracted with the Urban Institute and the University of Chicago to do a national evaluation where we really tracked 13 different indices of systems change. Are people working more closely together? Is treatment more available? Is the quality of that treatment improving? And we're very, very proud that 12 out of 13 of the indices we came up with showed statistically significant improvements across all 10 of our sites. You can go on to the next one. This is a little overview of the 10 sites. And then I can tell you a little bit about Anchorage, or in our Anchorage site, 9 of the 13 indices grew significantly, and 4 of them also increased in a linear, consistent fashion. So it's really important to know that the model's working nationally, and it's very clear that it's really working here in Alaska as well. The especially dramatic increases were ratings for the availability and quality of treatment, the use of client information to advance a case, and use of screening and assessment tools, as I described before. In terms of Anchorage-specific data, a local evaluation team was led by Dr. Andre Rosé, who's here at the University of Alaska. He studied a number of the different elements of the Reclaiming Futures, and while I won't be able to go into all of the research, I do have a couple of slides I'd like to share. First, Dr. Rosé and his colleagues found that young people with individual service plans that have specific individualized goals were 9 times more likely to complete treatment than those that did not. That's pretty amazing. Second, teenagers with a natural helper, also part step 3 of the Reclaiming Futures model, were 54% more likely to complete treatment. And finally, teens that had at least 3 service contacts within 30 days, the 4th step of the Reclaiming Futures model, were more than twice as likely to complete treatment. This work builds consistently on previous research done by Dr. Michael Dennis and colleagues, which shows a very clear relationship between the importance of completing treatment and then these decreases in criminal acting out. It really is a very strong relationship that's been well documented in the research literature. In summary, across the country and here in Anchorage, we're most proud of the fact that young people are successfully being screened, assessed, and matched to treatment in a significantly different way than before Reclaiming Futures was part of the way they did business. The treatment itself has been dramatically improved because we've spent a lot of time and energy infusing these treatment systems with new evidence-based approaches that really have research behind them. In addition to treatment, young people are also accessing and engaging in positive community opportunities that help them to build skills and relationships like the ones you saw in the film that will really help them, again, move out of the system in a much more successful way. Community partners are working together in an unprecedented way to form new policies and reduce the kind of barriers that keep community agencies from working together this way. And as a result, fewer kids nationally are progressing into systems where there is a Reclaiming Futures kinds of initiative. What comes next? As proud as we are to be here, we're also here to say that what we've accomplished is only a start. There's so much more to be done. And I know that I don't need to tell you that there are literally thousands of kids and families here in the state of Alaska and tens of thousands around the United States who are grappling with addictions as well as crime and other kinds of problems. We believe that Reclaiming Futures is now ready after this pilot phase to begin an expansion and disseminate across the United States. And we're preparing our next steps to serve as a national program office, which will operate out of Portland, Oregon, to help other communities who'd like to try this now that the model is completed. Our colleagues in Anchorage have helped to develop and test this proven approach, and we understand and are very excited about the possibility that there's quite a bit of interest here in Juneau in terms of perhaps looking at a Reclaiming Futures model. And I want to assure you that you could not make a more important investment in a very successful and proven approach now that will allow you to reap benefits for years and years to come. it's as if substance abuse and juvenile delinquency are sort of a cliff that we see young people dropping off of. And Reclaiming Futures truly has built and engineered, designed, and built a kind of a bridge across a canyon. The reality is that many, many kids have come across that bridge in the 5 years that we've been piloting it. The bridge does not need to be redesigned. We just need to build more bridges of this kind in other communities. And with that, I'll end my formal remarks. And again, thank you so much for the wonderful opportunity to present to this important body, your attention, and for your continued support in providing national leadership in this area. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Madam Chairs, members of the committee. Again, my name is Bill Hitchcock. I serve as Children's Court Master in the Anchorage Superior Court and have the advantage of, I guess you might say, seeing both sides of our child protection system, the juvenile justice side and the child welfare side, which unfortunately tend to cross over to one another from time to time. I am pleased to be here today to just give you a very brief glimpse of this program from behind the bench. You've heard Dr. Nissen summarize very eloquently all the various features of it, but one of the features of it is you've got to have a court that's willing to commit and willing to step up and willing to help nurture the collaborative that it takes in order to build a system of care like this. When Reclaiming Futures first came to my attention back in 2001, the delinquency system was really struggling to achieve this balance between public protection, accountability, and offender rehabilitation, and in some ways not doing a real terrific job of it. We were taking the traditional response to misbehavior. You skip school enough times, you get expelled. You use drugs enough times, we dig you deeper into the system. For many of us, that was a frustrating time. Our overall juvenile crime rates actually had been going down over the previous 4 or 5 years, yet our success rates didn't seem to be going up. And kids were coming in with substance abuse problems at much earlier ages, kids using substances as early as 10 or 11 years old, binging, poly-substance abuse, all kinds of symptoms of, indeed, the disease that was creating juvenile crime for us in many respects. Reclaiming Futures challenged us to take a much broader look at our intervention techniques, and that began, as Dr. Nissen has pointed out, with screening. We had a tendency to screen and assess, but it tended to be a little bit too late down the road, and so we backed it up and we moved it to the front of the system. We already had, I think, fortunately for us in Anchorage, a fairly healthy atmosphere of collaboration among many of the juvenile justice agencies and community providers. But we were still a system that was based on deficits and not looking at assets, not looking at strengths, not capitalizing on the life skills that virtually all of our kids have some of. The first years of constructing this approach really took a lot of time and effort because we had to forge a model that was based on a treatment team decision-making process. Now, for those of you familiar with the justice system, it isn't generally a team work type of a thing. You know, you're meeting out a sentence here or there, you're prosecuting a crime. And as drug courts have done, we've spun it around a bit and looked at it from a team decision-making approach. What is going to serve the needs of this kid and his or her family the best? So it required probation officers, defense attorneys, and prosecutors to work together, and judges, to work together in a much more cohesive fashion. And at the same time, make sure that we're protecting the community. One of the ways in which we did that was to offer kids the ability to have their charges set aside at some point in the future if they successfully completed the program. This did not and does not handicap us in any way from collecting restitution, from imposing community work service, and where necessary, imposing sanctions. But instead of merely seeing the kid and seeing the kid again on a failure, we were able to come back and look at success and measure achievement in a variety of life skills. I think an important feature of this approach and one which has really been at the core of it has been the ability to manage these cases in a cohesive way so that you have an individualized service plan that meets the needs of that kid. It isn't a template that you just lay over the top of some offending behavior. And in order to provide activities, to provide youth development opportunities, it really requires that kind of case management. And we've been fortunate in drawing together some additional supporters in order to fund and manage many of those services. So today, the parties appear before me when they've worked out the plea agreement, if that's indeed the way we're approaching it. We will see them, send them on with encouragement to go forward, to attend treatment, to get a job, to go back to school, whatever the case may be. And I will hear back from everyone on what has been accomplished in about another month or two, and then perhaps another hearing, and finally a successful completion or graduation hearing, similar to the one you saw in the video, but not nearly that crowded a courtroom or dynamic an occasion. But it is a new mark for us, because instead of seeing something when something's going wrong, now we see it when something's going right, and we can acknowledge it, we can support it, and hopefully we can send that kid out of the system and not see him come back into court again. This is, again, a course that you have to set on and engage in and work collaboratively on, and as has been stated, many communities in this state can do that and have those committed players that can make this successful. I don't want to spend a lot more time, because I think it's very important for you to hear from one of our success stories, and it's a pleasure for me particularly, having seen this young man at times when things weren't going well in his life, to see where he is today, and I think he has a rather compelling story to tell you. Again, we thank you for your time and giving us an opportunity to preview this exciting program, and we certainly hope that we can see this begin to take root and become part of the way of doing business, essentially, in the juvenile justice system throughout the state. Thank you again.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Nolan Ogle Andreessen, a successful juvenile coming out of this program. I'd also like to thank you for your time.
Thank you, Nolan.
Today, I will start out by giving you guys a little bit of my background and my history before I got into Reclaiming Futures, even before the program was introduced to the juvenile system. When I was about 11 years old, I was put on probation for stealing at a box store by the name of Kmart. From there, I was on ordinary probation. You have your 8 to 10 standard rules, and then whatever ones the probation officers fill in on the piece of paper. Now, those rules are very simple and plain. You have don't do drugs, ingest drugs or alcohol, abide by all state mandatory laws, don't carry weapons or knives. I forget the others, but the plain and simple rules. And other than that, the probation officer sets you off out of his office with those rules to go by. Not a whole lot of support and structure there. Back when I was about 16, I believe, this program was coming into Alaska, and Master Hitchcock gave me the opportunity to set some of my charges aside if I completed this program. So I willingly took the offer, and it was probably the best decision of my life. This program has changed my life in so many dramatic ways, I cannot explain it to you. When I got into the program, there was an automatic change. The automatic change was the structure came like boom, because I not only had just my probation officer, I had a counselor, I had an activity therapist, I had everybody I needed for structure and support, whereas before I didn't. And with that, I was able to become a very young, successful male juvenile. I came out of the program very successful, and I ended up back in Seward, which was kind of a bummer for me, because Seward is another town that is just, I don't know how to, it's overcome by drugs and alcohol and juveniles. So today I'm here hoping to get this program elsewhere, not just in Anchorage. In Seward, I had a relapse, but that didn't deter me any, because this program taught me everything I needed to know about reaching out for help when I needed it. And by knowing that, I've been able to overcome the drugs and alcohol once again, and now I live a life, a very great life. I'm 18. I have a new car. It's not very new, it's a 01, but for me, it's a very good standing point from looking at my parents right now, who are still using narcotics at the age of 51 and 30-something. Not only that, I have a two-bedroom apartment with my girlfriend, soon-to-be fiancé. I have a very bright future, you know, because of this program. All these guys are like extended family to me. I can't tell you how much, how grateful and thankful I am because of them. Anything that these guys ask you for is probably, you know, something good. I don't know what to say. I'm sorry. Yeah, it's a great program. It changed lives. So I'm here to vouch for them. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you, Nolan. We can be kind of scary up here sometimes, so we really appreciate that you were willing to testify to us. We appreciate that.
And you'll have, I hope, an opportunity to ask Nolan some questions. He's very, very interested in answering some of your questions, and he's already been grilled by a couple of legislators, and so he's versed. He's ready. As I mentioned earlier, my name's Tom Bagich, and you've been hearing from a number of the different members of the Anchorage Reclaiming Futures Project. I want to thank you again for the opportunity to let us present to you and let us tell you a little bit about what we're doing. And I'm always moved. I heard Nolan first a couple of years ago when he was still in the midst of going through the program, presented to a national group, and Nolan was struggling then too. And I just want you to know that the guy I see today is so much more mature even than the guy who was succeeding then. So it's a pleasure to see this. You've heard the national context for Reclaiming Futures. Master Hitchcock also shared with you some of the local context of what we're doing in Anchorage. Some of the things that Laura Nissen talked about really underscore the effective efforts that we're looking at here for changing the way we do business in the justice system. And that really, I want to re-emphasize that changing business in the justice system is what this is all about. The data shows that even those youth not initially in the Reclaiming Futures pool, even those not in the pool of those we would bring into Reclaiming Futures, are seeing the impact of the process, the screening process, the assessment process, etc. Today, many of the elements of treatment that Reclaiming Futures emphasizes are being applied across the board in Anchorage. It provides new and stronger meaning to what we say when we observe, you know, we're going to get a kid through successful treatment. Treatment means something different now. It's evidence-based or evaluation-based treatment. It means more frequent team meetings. It means that we're building our assessments based on normed tools, working tools that have been proven to be effective elsewhere. It means that we're using that strength-based approach that you heard Master Hitchcock and Dr. Nissen talk about. We're actually finding ways to not just hold youth accountable, but provide, as we say, even more than treatment on the other end of things, so that when a kid enters back into the system, they have, as Nolan observed, the ability to recover even if faced with relapse, the ability to come back in. We talked a little bit about some of our successes in terms of the evaluation. What we didn't share with you is upwards towards 98% of the kids that are coming into the juvenile justice system in Anchorage now that are receiving treatment based on now the Reclaiming Futures model, which is new. We also, the pro-social opportunities piece cannot be stressed enough. The opportunity for a kid to give back to their community, to connect them up with jobs and opportunities, is a piece that's been missing or existed haphazardly. We now provide for that. Master Hitchcock emphasized how the system now collaborates. So not only do you have this change with the kids that are coming into the system, but the system now collaborates in a much more effective manner. It gives our us a chance to share resources so that when you see these systems changes we're describing, the Robert Wood Johnson funding that came to Reclaiming Futures wasn't used for treatment. It was used to ensure that we could build the tools necessary to change how the system collaborates. That means we've got the template. That means that anywhere in the state that we would want to apply this template, we could do so now without having to go through the 5 years of building the wheel, as it were, or the cost of building the wheel, as it were. We're just reallocating how we do things within the system. One very positive aspect of the effort is these treatment approaches are also now subject to strong evaluation. I know how much the legislature likes to know whether these things are or aren't working, and that's part of why we showed you Dr. Rose's data, which is looking at kids where we're applying not even our RF core group. These are other kids in the system where we're applying the elements, and what we're showing you there is that these treatment effects are working for keeping kids in treatment to the end. And when treatment's meaningful and you keep them in toward the end of the process, then you're going to have that success we've been talking about. I know that there are things that are going to come before you, and we want to bring your attention to a few of those things so that you're aware of them and you consider them in your deliberations, especially now as you end, as you're coming to the end of this session and as you go into next year, your second session of this legislature. When your oversight brings you into contact with similar efforts like this that really stress the importance of evidence-based or strong evaluation-based mm-hmm. treatment, we encourage you to support those kinds of things. We really, really emphasize that. We think that those kinds of approaches are important, and the present leadership of the legislature and the Department of Health and Social Services have acknowledged that in the past, and we hope you continue to do so. When you see a reallocation of resources, when the Department of Health and Social Services, for example, comes to you and says, we're going to reallocate a little bit, we're going to do some sharing of our resources, embrace it. Understand that it's coming from an understanding of what works as opposed to somebody's whim. They really have thought this through, and it's not often I find myself able to look at the system and say the system's working, but in this case, the system has been very, very supportive of our efforts with Reclaiming Futures, the Department of Health and Social Services, the Division of Juvenile Justice, and the Division of Behavioral Health. When you see that that shift in that model, ask questions. Let them explain to you why this treatment approach makes sense. If you have questions, really just embrace that. We encourage you to continue to support treatment services funding. Treatment services mean something when we can actually base them on evaluation or evidence-based approaches. And when they do, what happens when you cut treatment services is programs go away. They just go away. And that means that Nolan's approach, his ability to work with Volunteers of America, which is what he did, will go away if those things happen. So we encourage you in the budget process to understand that the treatment you provide a kid, which just today the numbers I heard, nationally the numbers are $3,000 worth of treatment is one way of looking at this, or you could look at $40,000 worth of incarceration. And that's in the lower 48. The numbers at McLaughlin are as high as $73,000 per kid. So there's a definite gain to be made with treatment. So we encourage you to look at that in your budget deliberations, to support treatment services in the process. And in general, I know that that's come up before in your discussions and deliberations. The cost of our justice and correction systems continue to rise, and they rise on the back end. Hard beds, the detaining, all of those things lead to greater costs, and they don't necessarily keep those kids out of the system. What Reclaiming Futures shows is an approach to the justice system that can keep kids from penetrating deeper into the system, and that is bound to save you money in the long run. That sometimes it's difficult to think of the long run, but we have to. We have no choice. We all know that we face a budget situation in this state that will not get better over time. It will at best stay about the same, and at worst begin to deteriorate. So those kinds of long-term vision things are things to be wary of and cognizant of. And frankly, as new sites come online, like Juno has expressed an interest tomorrow at lunch, we're going to meet with some Juno leaders who are interested in doing a Reclaiming Future site here. As that happens, embrace their interest. Find ways to be supportive of that change. Change can be good, especially when it's based on 5 years of research and work. And we were lucky in Alaska that Anchorage is one of the 10 national sites. We were lucky. And I'm going to tell you, it was not easy. We went through a lot of pain and suffering on that as a site. But I will tell you today that the number of individuals that are not involved with the state, that are not involved in government, that are engaged in reclaiming futures is wonderful. And I would be remiss if I didn't tell you about those folks. But today, when a kid says, I want to learn to become an electrical engineer, we've got contacts. We can take them there. We can tour them around the apprentice school for the electrical engineers, and they'll tell them, if you don't get your math credit, you're not going to be an electrician. You know, we have offices that are willing to share with people their experiences, individuals who are willing to share with them their experiences, people who will act as natural helpers. And finally, we have those agencies, businesses, and others who are providing incentives and resources for our kids while they're in the system itself. And some, I just want to say that the combined approach, which is this consistent screening and assessment, the youth-focused case-managed approach, the frequent team meetings, the court meetings, the effective programming, treatment programming, the pro-social incentives and employment opportunities together, these folks engaging our local community in our efforts are working to break the cycle of substance use. When you break that cycle, you turn the spigot on future involvement in the gang system and gives our chance for our youth to become productive citizens that are actually tax-paying, not tax-draining citizens for our economy. So encourage future approaches in your own communities, whether it's Wrangell or Fairbanks or Juneau or wherever it might be. Support innovative case management that shares resources. Support the evaluation-based treatment wherever possible, and ensure that in the long run, if we do have cost savings, you continue to reinvest them in our treatment and our prevention efforts. And with that, I want to thank you for your time and ask at this time, if you have questions, what I'll do is, as you ask the questions, find the appropriate person and bring them up here to answer them for you. And really, we do thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Tom. We really appreciate it. And I'm going to turn the questions over to Senator Davis, because she's the, I didn't mention earlier, but she is the Hess chairman in the Senate side. And Senator Dyson has to go if he would like to ask the first question. So I'll turn it over to you, Betty.
I'll give you that opportunity.
Thank you. Tom, I appreciate immensely what you all are doing, and I'd kind of like you to tell me how well it's working for the program here to integrate with the efforts of Child Protective Services and Juvenile Justice, and how it should work in the ideal world.
Master Hitchcock, I think I'm going to ask you to answer that question. Outside of the fact that I will say that the Commissioner Jackson has been very supportive within, we're told we have to sit on the left side for answering questions. Commissioner Jackson is very supportive of the shared approach and the communication that exists, and we do have Office of Children's Services personnel who support us. Travis in Anchorage does sit on our sustainability team and works very closely with us.
There's a number of cases, not a huge number, in which we have what's called dual jurisdiction. We have a child in need of aid who also is a delinquent. And one of the, this may be more future than present, but one of the anticipations for our growing round of reclaiming futures delivery of services is to begin to bring more mental health treatment in, and that's what a lot of these kids need. They're co-occurring disorders. And OCS has been at the table from the very beginning when we first designed the collaborative, and to the extent that we do have those cases, we are able to work both state agencies together. The primary agency will still be juvenile justice as long as they're on probation, but it really does hold a lot of hope for us to reach some of these mental health issues as well as keep these kids who are really neglected and abused kids from becoming criminal kids.
If I could add, one of the things we've noted, there's no denying that kids that have been in our child welfare system and their families are often the same families that are in our juvenile justice system. And part of the key to reclaiming futures is we do, in fact, engage the family. So, you know, I'm hopeful, though I'm going to defer to the experts on this, but I'm hopeful to see those impacts as those kids that are in, Nolan told a story earlier today about his younger brother. He was on camera earlier today and told a story about his younger brother, who's 17, who is going to invest with him in a camp trailer today or this summer so that they can be doing work and cooking down in Seward, doing some things down there. Well, that's an example of him being a pro-social example to his own brother, who's growing up in the same family that he is. So those are the kinds of unintended consequences I hope are also going to come out for Planning Futures.
Thank you.
I'm sure there's lots of questions, and I'll go to the House side, and I think Berta had her hand up first.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Davis. I always have lots of questions at these presentations. And originally my question was for Mr. Begich, but now part of it, I think, is from based on Master Hitchcock's comments. You said, Mr. Begich, that 98% of the juvenile justice kids who are receiving substance abuse treatment now are receiving it through Reclaiming Futures model.
In Anchorage.
What, in Anchorage.
What I said there was that the components that were described to you that were the components of the Reclaiming Futures mm-hmm. model, we looked at cases of youth that had come through the system but weren't our RF kids, our Reclaiming Future kids. And what we noted was when we looked to see, were they getting a screening? Were they getting a normed assessment? Were they getting evidence-based treatment? Were they having a natural helper or a strength-based natural helpers? Or were they having a strength-based plan? We noted that of the those receiving treatment, 98% of them, I think that's the number, Karen, I'm looking at, 98% of them were receiving evidence-based treatment. There's different percentages for each of the things, but they're in the high 90s for all but the natural helpers piece, which was the lowest piece for those non-Reclaiming Futures youth. And what we're seeing there is a systems change.
Okay.
How we approach the systems.
Through the chair, my question is, do you have trouble, are there delays, do you have trouble finding treatment beds? And then similarly, after Master Hitchcock's comments, do people have a long wait to get appropriate mental health services? Because my understanding is we have a kind of a looming crisis in available treatment providers.
We do. I'm going to ask Karen Schaff from VOA, who's our treatment fellow, to answer that
Thank
question.
You.
But before she does, I just want to add that one of the other components that we have added just recently is we've just gotten some approval for funding, which will allow us to do both mental health and substance use assessments. And that, to me, is part of our way of integrating. And the irony is that's coming, some of that support from the Division of Juvenile Justice, which is a unique way of sharing resources. So,
all right, Karen Schaff, Volunteers of America, through the chair. Capacity is an issue for us in this in the Anchorage community as well in the full state. And it is something that, because of all the collaborations, we've made huge gains in our capacity. There are wait lists. That is part of the thing when Tom's talking about funding. The more that funding is decreased, the more wait lists there are because there's less services. So this effort has really helped us achieve capacity. We've added a mental health counselor, which I'm very excited about. It's been a long time coming. We've added case management. And we've been trying to shorten the length of time that it actually takes to get a kid into the door. Because you have an opportunity, and if you wait too long, you miss the opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you.
Let me add to that, too, that what happens with the wait. If a probation officer believes that they're not going to get effective time, you know, if they're not going to have that kid come in a timely manner, that kind of breaks their faith in the process as well. So we've really bent over backwards to ensure that kids are seen as quickly as possible. We've leveraged a number of private resources to help us do that, and we'll continue to work that way. And that's part of what we teach when we teach, hopefully we'll be teaching when we go to other communities, is that, you know, there are local resources you can draw on as well. They don't have to, you know, they don't have to be government resources. And we certainly believe that sharing of resources is one way of doing that, but also tapping local resources.
Before I ask for another question, could I just ask, could you give a real background, exactly how many you're serving, how you get those cases, where you get your source of funding. I know you got some from Robert Wood Foundation.
Yeah, there's a lot of questions
in
there.
And
I'm going to ask Linda to join me up here, Linda Moffitt from the Division of Juvenile Justice. But let me start with the last and work my way to the first. Okay, so. The initial funding for the organizational effort, none of the money could be used for direct treatment services, came from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. That money was used for this five-year period to frankly help us break through the resistance that exists within all of us. We all had it to changing the way we did business. We all thought we knew how to do it best, and what we learned through both the national information that was provided to us as well as our own experiences, that there were better ways to do things. So the Robert Wood Johnson money was specifically for that. We were able to secure that funding for a five-year period, and they have generously offered up some more money to allow us to do that sort of infrastructure piece still for the next couple of years. And frankly, it's a sustainability issue. As we've developed Reclaiming Futures, I've actually written my job out of the budget because you're not going to need it anymore because that piece is done. The system is changing. So that's one of the exciting things about it. When's the last time you heard about a director writing themselves out of their project? You know, so I'm excited about that, and I think that that's a really good thing. We've also received funding for direct treatment services and support from the Rasmussen Foundation. They were very compelled by what we were able to show them. They want to see the evidence, and they're going to see it. And we know from what they've already preliminarily told us that they're very excited about what's been happening. We got a little bit of support also from the Mental Health Trust Authority, and that came also based on the fact that we're dealing with both populations, substance using populations, mental health populations. We're working with two user groups. That's very important to them, and of course their funding streams. We have small pots of money we've received from other entities and groups. I probably have to go back and look at all my lists, but there's a number of these small ones from SAMHSA, from the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration to help us with a few things, but also some private funding and support, a lot of it in terms of incentives and things like that. Okay, so that's third question. The second question dealt with the numbers that we're seeing, and my preliminary before I pass it over to Linda is just to say that the numbers for Reclaiming Futures is one number, but now that the system has changed, that number takes on a whole new context because every kid who comes through Anchorage Juvenile Justice is going to be screened now, every kid, and that's a lot of kids. So I'll pass that over to you to talk about screening and assessment and then the numbers of kids that now get, I want to say, the elements of Reclaiming Futures to the best of our knowledge. So,
through the chair. My name is Linda Moffitt. I'm with the Division of Juvenile Justice. And the project was initially designed to have juveniles that are involved with the legal system. So in the state of Alaska, of course, that's the Division of Juvenile Justice. And we're looking at youth that were early penetrating the system. We were trying to catch kids in a more preventative nature. It's not always possible because, of course, we've talked about those kids that have actually been in court and are on probation. But we kind of have two tracks. And so some of those youth, they are going into Reclaiming Futures and getting screened and assessed and entering that project without ever going to court. And then some of them go to court and actually get formally placed on probation or have their charges held or vacated at the end, as if as Ms. Master Hitchcock was describing. But some of the changes that haven't been mentioned is that we really are screening kids. The Division of Juvenile Justice has beefed up our screening. We're looking for things that we didn't formally look for. And that includes mental health issues and it includes the substance abuse issues. And in addition, one of the things that hasn't been mentioned yet that is quite exciting in terms of a change is just that we actually have an assessor that comes to the Division of Juvenile Justice every week. So that actually increases the likelihood that kids will get those assessments because they're coming back to the same place where they've already been, and they know that the probation officer is right there, and if they don't show up, we're going to know immediately if they've failed to appear. Mm-hmm. So those things have actually helped increase our likelihood of getting assessments completed and referrals. Another thing that's happened, I've seen a note here, but there's about 175 kids that have actually been served through this. Mm-hmm. But a couple things that have happened, that number belies what's really happened because in Anchorage we also have instituted a local policy about when kids would be referred for assessments that goes along with that screening. So that it's much more comprehensive, that sets specific guidelines about when this will happen and how it will happen and what kinds of things will get this service. Lots of times in the juvenile justice system, things can be up to the discretion of the probation officer. But we really wanted it to be more objective and less subjective so that we were actually getting the youth that need to have this kind of treatment happen for them. The other thing that's been significant, and this isn't part of your question, but if you've indulge me just briefly, that's significant for Division of Juvenile Justice is that changing focus to more of a strength-based approach and looking at assets. And that is actually one of the, in my mind, the most significant things that's happened because probation officers are now exploring youth from the status of also their assets and actually making that information available in predisposition reports that are written for the court, and it's become a focus. So those are some of the intangible things that will impact all youth. And
I was going to get a chance.
so that will be helpful for us in the future.
I think, and one of the points that Linda makes here is you often hear about this described as a program, but when you realize it's now a systems change. So we had 175 kids go through the program, but then we began to apply all the pieces to all the kids. This is what every kid gets a screening. That leads to the assessments that now go beyond the Reclaiming Futures kids. And those assessments lead to the evidence-based treatment, which goes beyond the Reclaiming Futures kids. So now we're talking about, how many intakes do we have in Anchorage in a year?
There's about 2,000.
Right. So those 2,000 kids will get the screening process. And that's what you got to see that's happened here. The system's changed. That's what I love about it. Did I answer your question, Senator?
You've answered my question. But what the other thing that I guess I should have asked, then, who trains the probation officers to have the mindset that you have?
Well, it's funny you should ask that, since tomorrow morning at 8:30 over there in the Treadwell room, we're going to be training probation. Laura Nissen's up here to train the juvenile probation staff and detention staff and some local partners. She did the original training in Anchorage, and now we have staff who can do the training. It's replicable because we have developed the resource here. Master Hitchcock, myself, Nolan, Karen, all of us have that skill set now, the ability, Linda, the ability to actually train others.
And I'm sure the members of the committee might have other questions that you might want to ask. Sharon, would you like to go?
Thank you very much, Madam Senate Chair. it's late in the afternoon, and I think I missed when we started this, because I see that in your page where you have marked the stages, the six steps that you go through, that you do have down here a listing of process and outcome measures, and of course on anything like this, if we're talking about evidence based, then you do need to have measures, and you need to see them tracked over a period of time before you really know if you're doing what you think you're doing, and or you say you're doing, one of those others. And I'm just wondering how long we have to see whether or not we have an evidence based model being done right here. And then the last part of that question, this is unfair, but the last part of that question is, in this state, Department of Health and Social Services did a study several years ago, and that study several years ago said that one of our huge problems in this state was fidelity to model, mm-hmm. and that was the block on being able to actually accomplish evidence-based and sustainable programs. So if you could answer those two questions, I'd really appreciate it.
I'm going to ask Dr. Nissen to start that, and do you want to? And Linda will also offer some ideas on that.
I will be sure to introduce myself this time. I'm Laura Nissen. I apologize. I'm the National Program Director for Reclaiming Futures. A couple of things in terms of the way we interpret the term evidence-based when it comes to this model. In many respects, Reclaiming Futures is the knitting together of quite a few other previously established evidence-based approaches. So we weren't intending to forge an entirely new evidence-based approach. We were intending to knit together several pre-existing ones. We don't need to prove in Reclaiming Futures that treatment works. That evidence base is already there, or create new treatment models per se. We really were trying to build upon previous research on children's system of care for mental health and some of those kinds of approaches, which have a very fine evidence base. The six steps of Reclaiming Futures model, the evaluation was broken into two different parts. There was the national evaluation, which really answered the question, is it possible to sort of begin to have the players work together in this manner? And that is those are research numbers I was just speaking to. Approximately half of our sites are doing a local, much more in-depth evaluation. And Dr. Rose's numbers that we've shared with you in a preliminary form are the beginning of the data output that's going to come out of those. Those are not yet completed. They are the research that's going to show the deeper level measures that you're asking about. But because we've just now ended the fifth year, that particular level of research. So it's really two questions. Can you change the system? The answer appears to be yes.
from the research we've got. The second question is, does the fact you can change that system, does that really break down and show up in the client improved client outcomes? And we're beginning to see that, at least from our preliminary read on that data, it does appear to have a very positive, yes, you can change the system, and yes, that appears to have a very positive effect on client outcomes, if you have fidelity to a specific approach. Mm-hmm. In a preliminary sense, that's what we can say at this point.
Yes, Ralph, is there anything
follow
you
up,
continue?
Please, thank you very much. I guess you're talking about systems change, and mm-hmm. systems change in itself is not evidence-based unless you're talking about, I mean, I don't think that itself is something that could be, doesn't seem to me evidence-based. It's the treatment programs themselves. The treatment programs themselves in the state have been shown in the past to not be able to be evidence-based because there's no fidelity to a model. The model isn't sustained, and therefore there's serious problems with that. You're putting together a systems change, but depending upon, I would assume, the strength of the individual models that you're knitting together across almost platforms. And that's a year and a half that we're looking at, or how do you do 5 years if you started and then, yeah, could somebody answer that for me? Because I think you need more than 1 or 2 years. You
absolutely
need more to get there.
Absolutely.
Karen Chow.
Please.
The data that we tracked was beginning in 2003. So it is a couple of years. It's just definitely preliminary, and we'll be building on that as we go. We've got that built into the system. The models that we're using in the treatment services are evidence-based, and they all have fidelity measures put in them. So you're absolutely right. Model fidelity is really critical. In every best practice program that we've implemented has that fidelity built in. So there's ways to make sure we're staying true to the model, and that we'll be staying true to the positive outcomes as well.
And one last, if I have a question.
Just make it brief. Because
thank you. This
people.
Is very, very, yes. Very brief. I do think this is really critical, yes. Because unless we have a way to evaluate the information, sure. It, you know, there's really no way to know the value or the benefit of it. Where would there be? Would it be possible to get more information about the actual measures and what you're doing? On that, reports on that, more information, and it's impossible for you to do a great deal now, I understand that, but for those of us who have worked in the field and have an interest, it would be, I think, very beneficial to know.
Absolutely, we can provide the measures that we use for the Reclaiming Futures evaluation, and we can provide some of the data from the evidence-based practices that we've implemented into our system.
Okay, Representative Newman, you had a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Begich, I
yes.
guess this question is for you. We recently had an overview from OCS, mm-hmm. and I can't help but think there's a connection here or some way that you can maybe assist in what OCS does, or they can provide information to you. It just seems that there's a lot of things that you have in common, the problems that you deal with.
That's correct.
Could you, I have two questions, and I just want to stay in for time.
Sure.
Could you explain that relationship? And also, we looked at your evaluation data from Anchorage. How would that change from an area like Anchorage to maybe some more rural urban area like Mansu, and then compare that out to like Bethel?
Okay. The latter question is a little harder for me. But on the first question, one of the things we did from the very beginning is we involved the office, what was then the Division of Family and Youth Services, now is the Office of Children's Services. At the very beginning of our coordinating stages, because we believe that those families are the same families to start with. One of the great joys of the last year for me, this last year in the project, has been the involvement of Travis Erickson in the Anchorage office from Office of Children's Services, and they've gone to a case-managed approach. We've begun to really explore that case-managed approach there, and he's become an active, involved player with us. He's looking to see how we're sharing resources. He's trying, so system-wise, they're looking to some of the things we're doing to replicate some of the things that that the OCS is doing. So in that regard, the collaboration exists. Where it will go from there will depend on a lot of things. It'll depend on our continued ability to reach out to the Office of Children's Services, which you are trying to do. We involve them in virtually every justice initiative going on in the community. So we're hoping to do more of that. We can continue to do that. I can't emphasize enough that from the commissioner on down, there's an understanding that these are the same families. And so our desire to share that resource is part of that. In terms of the measures, what we've done is we've created, and might even ask Andre to talk about these to some degree, how we could apply those to rural areas and urban rural areas. Do you think you could do that, about the measures that the evaluation committee's come up with and some of the other things? Do you think you're able to do that, Andre? Talk about it to some degree? Yeah, to some degree. What I will say is we have a really active evaluation committee. Come on up. Really active. I'm going to put him on the spot. We have a really active evaluation committee, and what we really did is we struggled with how can we actually know we're doing what we say we're doing. You know, clearly one thing is being able to measure whether we did or didn't apply evidence-based practices or these kinds of things are things we can track, you know, with a simple tracking system. And we've had two developments in that regard. One is a particular piece that we used, a tracking mechanism that we used to track the cases that you saw some of the evidence on here. And the second is a web-based system that we've developed that would be applicable for all the case management. So let me ask you to talk, Andre, if you would, about the actual system that we developed for the tracking of the data that was here. I think that's going to get to your question. The answer, I think, is yes.
We'll be able to track. Through the chair, yeah. My name is Andre Rosé. I'm a professor at the Justice Center at the University of Alaska, Anchorage. And the evaluation is proceeding into two directions. One is a case review of old files, youth who have already participated in the Reclaiming Futures model. And what we track for those youth is we reviewed the files and looked at how many of the files indicated that the youth had a strength-based plan, how many of the files indicated the youth had a natural helper, how many of the files had goals that were specific to the youth. And we had about 20 of these measures, and again, we'll be more than happy to provide the very detailed list to you. And then we also looked at whether the youth completed treatment. And then what we found is that several key elements were important in treatment completion. For instance, youth who had a natural helper were far more likely to complete treatment than youth who did not have a natural helper. The second component of the evaluation is a shared web-based system where different players will come into the system and enter data that can be shared across agencies. And then those data can also be used to perform an evaluation to see how the model is working at the local level. There's no doubt that that could be replicated in other communities such as Palmer or Bethel, and there's also no doubt, particularly in Bethel, that the Reclaiming Futures model would be even more critical in those communities than it was or has been in Anchorage.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
You're quite welcome. Representative Fairclough, did you have a question?
No, ma'am.
Okay. I see the Chair of Hess has one.
I have a question about the natural helpers. Are they paid people or are they volunteers?
Ideally, natural helper is a volunteer. It's somebody that the youth or the family have identified that is a pro-social person in the life of a youth. And we actually it's interesting that you asked that question, Madam Chair, because one of the difficulties initially was identifying a natural helper because, you know what, kids are actually embarrassed to tell you because they don't want to let positive people in their lives necessarily know that they have slipped into the system. So we actually had to sit down. We have a pro-social committee, natural helper committee. We actually sat down with probation officers and defense bar and others, and we sat down and we actually talked about, okay, so how are we going to work with these kids to identify them? That was one of our struggles. We came up with a whole series of steps that we have to go through, and they're all about trust building. But what we found is kids eventually will identify somebody in their life. It might be a relative, it might be a friend down the street, but somebody who is that they're proud to know, you know, that they feel positive about. So those are the people that are the natural helpers. Now that said, one of the things that we are attempting to do with the Substance Abuse Mental Health Services Administration money is to develop a small advisory group of graduate families of Reclaiming Futures. That would be youth and parents that have gone through Reclaiming Futures. And it would be our intent to provide them small stipends to meet on a regular basis. And so they become kind of our paid professional natural helpers, as it were. And I think that we're not there yet, but we are getting very close to that point. And that's something I'm looking forward to, because that comes more from my background and my area of wanting to engage the families and the youth that have actually been through the process with helping and mentoring the youth that are actually, and families that are in the process already. Does that answer your question, Madam Chair?
You may follow.
I've got two or three questions. Sure. If anybody else has some questions, just holler, I'll stop. But in the 10 cities across the United States, were there any that were small, very small communities, like a village or something, so that we could see how it worked there?
Absolutely, through the chair. Absolutely, there were. It's very the sites are very, very different. The entire state of New Hampshire, for example, is a site. The city of Chicago, Cook County, is a site. But also I just blanked on the name of the reservation.
Rosebud.
Rosebud Reservation is a site, which of course is both small and isolated area. So we Santa Cruz, Portland, Seattle, three counties in western Kentucky, Marquette, northern Michigan, which also is quite rural. As a matter of fact, it's a wide variety of sites, and that's part of the excitement about the model. Seeing it applied in an urban setting like Seattle, Portland, or Chicago, or a sort of urban setting like Anchorage, and then also seeing it Rosebud or statewide in New Hampshire or in those predominantly rural western Kentucky counties, etc. Would that be an accurate? Yeah. So.
Okay, and another question would be. How critical is it for them to have jobs? I mean, I can see in a community where they need to do community service or something like that to help out, because in many areas in our state we don't have jobs available. You know,
it's a good question. I'm not quite sure I can fairly answer that to you. I can give you my opinion about that. I would turn to one of the experts probably to talk about how the importance of an actual job is, but. I believe that I know for a fact that one key component to success is graduation. Let me just be clear about that. That academic success in virtually every study I've ever seen, and in particular in the one that I love to cite from 97 by the RAND Corporation, says that you want to keep a kid out of the adult system and you want to keep him from offending as a juvenile, you get him to graduate. And that's the primary thing. So education is critical. That's a piece that's a piece that's stressed. But in terms of employment, it's always been my belief that you want to build skills and opportunities with young people, and that where there are skills and opportunities, a young person has the ability then to pay for themselves, to get an apartment, to get a car, to do the things that Nolan identified for you in his testimony. So I would say to you as a practitioner, but not as an academic expert, that the job and employment connection is critical. And I think even in a community where those maybe jobs aren't available, and actually your own community, which has a high unemployment rate, I know, and I know that makes it very, very difficult. There are opportunities for youth to participate in employment-like experiences that may not be quite what we're talking about when we say a job, but that might be the way we'd approach it in a community like, say, Wrangell, or frankly, communities with chronic unemployment like Bethel or like Queefluck or like, you know, Accuchuck or other places where the employment is virtually the entire community. It's much more difficult, but you, at least you want to give them the skill sets to be able to do that. I don't know if anybody else wants to comment on that.
Maybe Nolan can answer this, but maybe somebody else could. But when you get done with the kids, do they? For instance, I'm thinking of somebody in a village where there's no jobs,
mm-hmm.
and will they if they've had some kind of training or something to do something, will they have enough self-esteem to be able to leave the village and go somewhere place where there is a job?
I'll if you think you can answer that, Nolan, I'll put that on you, but I have an answer to that as well.
All that I would like to say is they do, when you graduate from treatment or Reclaiming Futures program, they do their darn best to make sure that you know where you can get help from or when, and to make sure that you have that self-esteem to be able to bring yourself upon to reach out for help. They do.
In support of that, I was the wellness director for Cook Inlet Tribal Council on a grant for a number of years, and part of what we did is very much what Nolan just described. As a youth, we worked, my job was to create village-based evaluators in these villages to help develop in these villages with chronic unemployment in a couple of them. And what we did is very much what Nolan just described. Our job was to support the skill acquiring of the individuals. So we ended up developing 7 village-based evaluators, all of which had, none of which had graduated from high school, all of which were, 7 of the 8 were females who were single moms. And our job was to see if we could develop a skill set that would give them this title of evaluator. Well, we kept providing support and opportunity, much as Nolan's describing that the Reclaiming Futures way process does it. And I can tell you today that 5 of those developed enough skill sets that they went on to becoming evaluators, 5 of the 7. And I think that that same model applies here. Even if the opportunity isn't there, if the skill set is there, it's coming hand in hand with, would you say, self-esteem? How do you feel about yourself these days, Nolan?
These days I feel very great about myself.
I think that's the key right there. That's positive attitude. And I think that's a tough place to get to with a lot of our justice programs. Laura.
I'd like to just also say that, Laura Nissen, National Program Director.
Yes.
I would like to say that our experience across the last 10 years of building these kind of programs is that I think this issue is a perfect example of how no one system can solve this on their own.
Mm-hmm.
I know that back 10 years ago when I was helping to put some of these kind of programs together in Denver, we had a lot of experience working with youth employment coalitions, of which they're out there, and there's federal money that comes into every state to help promote youth employment and have special programs. Their repeated plea to us was, thank goodness you all came along and invited us to the table because we have jobs and opportunities for kids, but they're all using drugs. And so we have jobs for kids, but we can't get them clean and sober. We're thrilled to know that they're kids getting help, getting support, getting monitored. We'd love to give those kids our jobs. So the youth employment, the employment arena can't solve it. The alcohol drug treatment can't solve it on their own. The juvenile justice, schools can't solve it. Families can't solve it. This is what we mean by a sort of a cross-sector approach. And while I would really concur with what everyone said. No, I don't think it takes a job per se. It takes a youth leadership opportunity. And any time we can take a young person gradually out of the role of being sort of the passive recipient of something and put them in the role of being a contributor to the way the community runs, that is the kind of experience that we're looking for. And I think that's what Nolan really exemplifies.
And Nolan gave one good example about he's going to have a job this summer with his brother, right? He created that. He didn't have anything to do in his hometown, but they're going to go and you have a boat or whatever you said that you were going to get, and you're going to make money through that because you have confidence in yourself and you're able to pass that along to your brother. That could happen in the small villages and towns. They can come up and create all kinds of things that they might be able to. First of all, if they're going to reclaim their futures, first need to get an education, working on that level, moving on up the ladder, and doing the various little things that might be in their communities and they wouldn't have to leave. And so I'm very excited about the program. I just hope that we will be able to expand it. The information that you're going to provide to us is going to be helpful, and you want to make sure that we get enough to go to all committee members. And we will share it with all 60 of the people here if there's information that need to be shared. We want to take this time to thank the committee for staying for the meeting and coming and listen to this great report that you've given us. I know that Anna says she has to leave at this point, but I want to give you an opportunity to say something if you want to.
Thank you, Senator. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Both chairs. Well, it's just nice to hear young men and women that are being provided opportunities to advance themselves and take control of their lives. And it takes, as co-chair Wilson said today, it takes a lot of strength for people to come and testify in front of us. I know even as a legislator, when I testify before groups or committees, mm-hmm. I get dry mouth and my knees knock, and so
mm-hmm.
You've done a great job today, and I'm in no position to say I'm proud of you because I don't think I know you that well, but it's always very much a gift when someone comes and testifies before our committee, especially someone who's a youth. So just being involved makes such a difference for all of us here that we sometimes forget
yes.
other things that are happening in our community that don't affect us directly. So thank you for taking the time to visit us today.
Mm-hmm. And I think Representative Carter also have a remark to make.
Just a quick comment and something that Dr. Neeson said
brought it to mind, and Nolan reminded me too, that one of my pet peeves is when people talk about giving children self-esteem, because I don't believe anybody gives anybody else self-esteem. You have to earn it. And I think that Nolan exemplifies that very much. So thank you.
And one more thing, I'll give you an opportunity. If there's something that you need to share with us or something you expect for us to do and deliver to you, now is your opportunity to state that.
Well, Madam Chair, members of the committee, I want to just sort of restate, and I have some written remarks that I'll leave with the committee, but just restate first our appreciation and thanks for you having us come before you. And I didn't thank Rebecca Rooney for all her help, and I should. Committee staff was amazingly helpful to us, and the Division of Juvenile Justice, Tara Leah, as well. And I want to make sure that they're acknowledged for what they've done for us. But let me just reiterate a few points. Number one, we want you to encourage the approach and come up and share when you're back in town, Representative Sisson, when you're back in town. We'll walk you through what our web-based process and the other processes, and anybody, it's an invitation to everyone. Mm-hmm. But we want you to be very supportive of those approaches when they come up, because just like self-esteem, the community has to want it if it's going to succeed. That's what we learned the hard way. Number two, that when it comes to those funding issues, I know that you are pressed and pushed and pulled and drawn and quartered all the time by constituencies. We're asking one simple thing there, and that you not only insist that the treatment funds be evidence and evaluation based, and have fidelity, mm-hmm. but that you support those treatment amounts in the budget process, that you not see them, that they not decline. And that is an ask, and it's an ask that in time, if we're successful, we're going to want to, third, reallocate resources. And if we're successful, and we think we are going to be, and we think we're going to have the evidence to show you that, we already think we have some of that, we want you, when you have those budget decisions to make about, well, it looks like we have fewer people coming into the Division of Juvenile Justice, we're asking that you reallocate those resources to continuing to support treatment, mental health, substance use treatment, in this community, because in this state, because we think it does make a difference. And then finally, wherever possible, ensure that when innovative change comes before you, you're open to it, and that you embrace it and accept it, and ask them the critical questions you have asked today. With that, I just really thank you for your hard work and the encouragement you've given us today, just by through your attention and your superb questions.
All right, thank you. I'll turn it back over to the chair at this time, since it's our regular meeting time, and she might have some wrap-up that she needs to do. But before I do that, I just want to say to those people in the audience, we don't have enough time for you to come up and ask questions during the formal meeting, but maybe they might have some time after this, and you might want to stick around and just see if you could ask the question or two.
Madam Chair,
turn it back over to the representatives here.
Tommy, you had another.
I forgot to mention, we do have at 6 o'clock, if you're interested, we do have a small reception up at the Gastineau Room in the Baranoff. You're all welcome to come by. Superb food before you go to the Folk Festival, so stop by and if you wish.
We have a variety of receptions going on at this time. So,
I do want to make a comment to the group here that our committee has been working the last 6 months before session started, and mm-hmm. we met and we were working on ways to spend healthcare dollars wisely, and Betty was involved with that also, and we have come up with 8 recommendations, but the recommendations are using scientific-based programs mm-hmm. that we know work, measure things to find out what the difference is, you know, when you start and at the end, and prevention has got to be part of the key for Alaska is a state that kind of has a tendency to just throw money at the other end, and we've got to start doing more prevention. And so there's a lot of things. I'm very mm-hmm. proud of this committee because they have really worked quite a lot on trying to figure out what's the best thing for us to do and which direction we're going to go, and we are going to continue that on probably our emphasis will be on drugs and alcohol, so because that seems to be quite a few areas in our state that we're number one in that we're mm-hmm. not proud that we're number one in, and I think if we could get a control of some of that, it would help a lot.
Consider us a resource for you. Feel free to call on us at any time. and we're happy to be of assistance.
Okay, thank you so much for coming today. I'm surprised at how many of you came. I'm really pleased. Thank you so much, and we will try to see if we can get some things going. So, thank you very much. Okay, now I will end this meeting.